The Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory, the writing platform for professional writers who want to get more done in half the time. Learn more at airstory.co/club.
What if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Kira and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 43 as we chat with email copywriter Big Jason Henderson about what he has learned from sending more than a billion emails, creating high-performing email funnels, the things you should do with email that the experts tell you not to do, and why your value proposition is the most important element for increasing conversions.
Hey, Kira. Hey, Jason.
Hey, good to be here.
Great to have you, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, I think we really want to start with your story, but before we get into that, I've got to know, how big are you?
I'm only about 6'11".
Okay, so not that big,
no.
Then.
Not that big. That's nothing.
Yeah, why don't we start with your story? You're famous for email. Tell us how you got started as an email copywriter.
In 1996, I was playing professional basketball in Australia, and it was really laid back, so I had plenty of free time, and the local universities let me go into the computer lab. So I was just going around, and I started with SEO and local businesses, and I started doing email and e-commerce back then. Little did I know that, you know, e-commerce was going to be huge. I should have stuck with it. Yeah, I just started with that, and have you heard of the About.com brand?
Yes.
So back then, they were the mining company. And I was the exercise guide. So they basically worked with us to drive as much traffic as possible. So they were teaching us about building email lists, writing articles, attracting traffic, free traffic. And for email, all they said was, you know, it's kind of like having a one-on-one conversation. So if you can do that, then you can write an email. And that's basically all I knew. I was like, yeah, I can do that. I think that's an advantage for me starting way back then in 1996 because all I had was that one simple statement is like, you know, it's like having a one-on-one conversation versus a lot of people today, they're met with a lot of BS and like, don't do this, you can't do that, and this doesn't work, when basically people are projecting their failures and what they can't do on everybody else. Like, I can't do it, no one else can, but I didn't have that. So I was using personal images and writing very personal conversational emails. And then in 2006, I came upon Mech Labs and Marketing Sherpa. And that was huge because I'd heard a lot of the IM crowd talking about them. But when I went and visited Mech Labs and Marketing Sherpa, I found they weren't really practicing what they preached. So this last April was my 12th year going to the Mech Labs Marketing Sherpa Email Summit in Las Vegas. I've spoken there twice. I've taken their email messaging, value proposition development, landing page optimization, and online testing certifications probably about 8 times each. So that's where I've gotten a lot of my email knowledge, email ideas, and just ability to come into scenarios where companies have done the same promo over and over again for years, and it's stagnating. It's kind of like an old control that's getting a little stale. It's not doing like it used to. And I've been able to come in and with different lenses, be able to see what other email marketers can see.
Okay, so let's start with the question, you know, some of the copywriters are probably wondering, what are most of us doing wrong when it comes to writing email?
You're focusing more on the words. You're focused on being an email copywriter and not a salesman in print, I would say. Gary Halbert used to say all the time that it's about what you say, not how you say it. I look at some of my old emails where people are just besides themselves about the results and just the personal conversational tone. And I look back on them and I'm just, wow, that's, and as far as like a prose and like a you know, quote unquote writer, it's not very good. I was just interviewing Caleb O'Dowd, one of Gary Halbert's best proteges, and he was remarking about Scott Haynes, who Gary Halbert called his best student. He's like, man, I look at Scott's letters and they're not impressive. It's not pretty, but he would go for the jugular. Very simple, plain English, fourth grade level. So I think that's the biggest key right there.
I think a lot of people will say the same thing about Gary's writing too. You know, right. A lot of the letters that he wrote, they're not real pretty. They're very basic and very plain, but well thought out.
Yep.
So, Scott, one of the things that you mentioned is that people don't understand that you're trying to be a salesman in print in your emails. And then you also said that it's a one-on-one conversation. And I think a lot of people might be thinking, you know, how do I square those? We don't often think of sales as that kind of an intimate conversation, you know, especially when you're pitching to a large group. What do you think about that?
What I do is I just project in my mind, there's someone across from me, depending on the niche. Sometimes it's this guy with a beard and he's a redneck and he's got a beer in his hand. Other times it's a guy with a really nice, you know, custom-made silk suit. And we're at a boardroom. And other times I'm in the kitchen and I'm sitting on a bar stool with my elbows on a counter. And there's a middle-aged woman talking to me as she's cooking lunch.
So, Jason, to back up, before you have these images, what does your process look like before you can even envision these people that you're writing to? Before you even start the writing portion, what does that early research stage look like for you?
It's similar to long page sales letters. You're interviewing the product expert or the owner. I find that if there's partners, that it's the silent partner that usually has the best info. The lower level employees have really good info sometimes. And one of the first things I always ask is, I want to know if someone replies to an email, where does it go? And I want to see them. If they say, okay, we can get you, you know, the last weeks. I'm like, no, I want to see everything. Yeah, it's either a help desk or it's a regular email with the inbox. I always want to see that. I find that's some of the best gold right there. And depending on the niche and the product, personal blogs, depending on if it's like health related or something where there's a lot of pain and suffering, like I was doing some work for Halbert Protégé in anxiety, and I found some amazing personal blogs where it's just wailing and gnashing of teeth and talking about their issues. Typically, those type of blogs tend to gravitate toward other people with the same problem. So you got not only the blog writer, you know, writing about some amazing language and just writing emails for you, but then you got people replying and commenting that have the same problem. So it's just amazing to get a lot of fear, pain, anxiety, and issues that you can use for your emails. And then also, I find, depending on the niche, is professional articles, because a lot of time you have these professional writers for either, you know, offline publications that are online or just strictly online publications, and they've done a ton of research. They've written some amazing articles. Like, I was writing for Survival, and this writer basically went out and interviewed this, you know, survival prepper fundamentalist, and he was saying all kinds of crazy stuff like, you know, it's a fact that after 7 days, both women and children will turn to prostitution.
What?
What? I can't wait to find a link for that in the show notes.
So it's just like gold, like stuff like that, and just really good language, you know, even if you're not familiar with the market. You know, and then golf, like I've never golfed before and I've never taken a lesson. I used to hate watching it. And then Revolution Golf came calling, and my Mech Labs background helped with that because they wanted someone that was really good with data. I find a lot of email marketers are not good with data. They don't know what really works the best. So yeah, a lot of golf magazines, watching golf, talking to people that golf, stuff like that.
I'm curious, Jason, especially the beginning of your career as an email copywriter, how did you find your clients? Was it because you were working in-house that you were networking, or did people just come to you because they knew you were an expert?
I would say it was events. Yeah, I went to a lot of events. You know, you have to admit, I have kind of a built-in advantage over most people. I kind of stand out.
Yeah.
And so I was 6'11". I was wearing custom-made silk suits where most people were in jeans or shorts. And so I got a lot of people coming up to me asking what I did, to, you know, standing out. And then I would just tell them and they'd be like, oh, I could use that. Oh, I could use that.
Very cool. So you were talking about how one of the things that you do differently is that you understand data. And I assume that includes, you know, tracking and that sort of thing. Right. And this is something, you know, as I've sent out emails, I don't do a lot of emailing for clients, but for myself, I'm totally curious if you could walk us through what that means, what it looks like, and how you follow up and track and have become an expert in that.
At the minimum, it's very simple. It's basically, if you've ever used Google Analytics UTM code, it's the exact same thing. whatever link you're using in your email, you're just attaching UTM code. And you're, what I like to do is I like to put, for the term, I like to put the subject line. It just makes it easier in the tracking reports to have that subject line in there. And then I'll put the call to action. I'll put which email it is, if it's in a series of emails. And here's the most important thing, which I think is a huge problem for most email marketers, is I will put, whether it's a text link or an image link, and I'll say which numbered link it is. So if there's three links in the email, I'll do 1, 2, and 3. So then you get a lot of data. And like you can see, you know, I've seen a lot of BS about like, oh, you know, three links is the optimal number of links. No, it's not. Not if you're actually tracking. And you can see is like, huh. So I'm putting a link every time, like after a paragraph or so in the email, and it's getting a lot of clicks, which doesn't surprise me. It's just natural because people just are attracted to that blue underlined link. But if you actually use Google Analytics, you could see like, wow, I'm getting way more clicks on this top link, but hardly any sales. The people that are reading the whole email, they're converting the highest. And I find that over and over again, niche after niche, because I think people assume that if someone's a really targeted prospect, they want to leave right away. And I don't really agree with that. I'm like, if they're a really targeted prospect, then they're not going to have any problem reading your whole email.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you say that, you know, there's not an optimal number of links. Would you recommend for a lot of people to hold the link to the bottom, or is there a reason to stagger links throughout? And I guess another question, you know, as you're tracking this, because you're using the UTM code, you're generally doing this in analytics, I'm assuming, but are there other tracking methods that you're using as well?
I use Clicky.com, because I don't know if Google Analytics has changed, but the last time I checked, it doesn't do real-time revenue tracking. So especially when you're doing split testing, it's really cool to have Clicky, which does, you know, real-time revenue. So I can see exactly how much money has been made if I'm doing a split test, which emails bringing in the most amount of money, and then I can send off the winning email to the rest. So Clicky is good. And then, yeah, you just have to make sure that you've got either Clicky or Google Analytics revenue tracking set up on your thank you page.
For copywriters who are listening and maybe the tracking, this is all a little bit much for them, but they want to learn about it. What do you recommend, or what courses or training programs do you recommend for people who really want to understand how to do everything you just shared and provide more value for their clients?
I have a course at emailresponsewarrior.com, but I mean, literally you can just go to Google and search for URL or UTM code. And Google Analytics, they provide a tool where it actually will build the link for you. You just enter in what you want for each one, like term and source, and then you just click a button and it puts it out for you. So those are two options right there. And another thing, this is really good for if you are writing a lot of emails for clients, because if depends on your deal, like if you have a flat or commission-based or just strictly commission-based, this helps a lot for actually knowing what difference you've made versus relying on the client to say like, yeah, there's pretty good, but not much difference. Whereas you have this actually proof. One example is I had a client say, yeah, what I just said is like, yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know how much difference you made, but you know, good job. And I looked at the reports and I said, yeah, we actually made over $200,000 and our agreement is 10%. They're like, all right. And they
agreed. Sounds like a pretty good job.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to back up again, and you were talking about your research and then sitting down with this housewife and really thinking through your email. Do you use frameworks or certain frameworks as your go-to when you sit down and you're staring at that blank page?
I don't. If I used anything, it would basically be, you know, the typical ADA, but
yeah.
I just really focus on what I need to say to get the click.
Yeah.
And depending on if it's an affiliate promotion, it depends on who you're writing for. Like if I was promoting Clayton Makepeace's sales letter for this copywriting course, I would definitely be selling the click. I wouldn't be focusing on selling the product. But, you know, some people, they're really good people. They have really good products, but they're not the greatest copywriters. And sometimes you do have to do a little more selling in the email. So kind of depends on that. If it's a series, obviously when urgency towards the end of the email, that plays a factor in it. I find that typically last second emails, plain text works the best. Very simple, like you have to get this or it goes away. But yeah, ADA is typically my go-to, if anything, but typically I'm just, what do I need to say to get the click?
So let's talk about that. What is the difference between selling the click and selling the product? What does that look like in an email?
Okay, let me give you an example. So for Revolution Golf, I wrote an email that got the highest opens, the highest clicks, not the highest amount of sales because it was a low price product, but it was basically reach par fives in two, dot, dot, dot. That's another go-to is if I'm doing a really short sell the click email, it's sometimes the easiest thing to do is do like a Gary Halbert if then. So I basically said, if you want to reach par fives and two without changing your current swing, this could be the most important product you've ever seen. Click here to reach par fives and two. And that's basically like 38 words or something like that in total. And, you know, it was like 166,000 opens, 77,000 clicks.
Wow. And then that takes you to a landing page where you're selling the product.
Right. And in this case, it would have done way better. Like I've a lot of people, even including Scott Haynes, before he passed, reviewed this email, and they could not add anything to it. And we all theorized why I didn't do more sales. And it was because the sales letter was more generic for a generic product. I found this hook buried in one bullet. That was the only way the landing page addressed that. It was just in one bullet. And I told my client, you know, we need to do a custom landing page for this hook. And they didn't have the bandwidth to do it. So I think that's another important factor is when you can have a little control of the landing page as well and have a little more consistency from the email to the landing page, you're going to see a lot higher conversions. So that was a really short sell the click email versus I wrote in self-defense for the last year. And here's another bonus is, you know, self-defense is typically male, like 90% or more. And I was writing for my client's biggest partner. I was writing for the emails for my client and for the biggest partner for a big webinar and a sale. And I wrote a story about a woman. So obviously the owner, my client, and the partner were just like, what the heck are you doing? Our target is men. I said, yes, but all the men have wives. And so trust me, you got to test this. And so it was basically a story about a woman who was really prepared. It used an image, a real image that she actually had her gun in her pantyhose. And she sent us a picture with her dress hiked up just a little bit and her handgun in her pantyhose. Amazing picture. I put it at the top of the email, kind of like a Gary Halbert grabber. And I told the story about how she was in a public parking lot at Lowe's Home Improvement. It was daylight. She had a service dog and she had a husband that was a former state trooper. So she was highly trained and she still got attacked from behind and she was able... This is just a summary. She was able to basically knock the man to the ground, bruise his throat, and break his kneecap. And he was he was screaming for the police. Other than one urgency email, I wrote this before the urgency started, which is people say all kinds of stuff about, oh, this email works great, or this is the way you should write emails. And if you look, they typically start with urgency. That's just a side thing, is that urgency plays a huge factor and kind of overrides things. It got the most clicks and the most sales out of all the emails before the urgency started. And it was a huge hit. And then my clients started using it in Facebook ads, in content network, and it worked really well. And so basically, that's an example where you're using a really good story where you're actually selling the product. Because that was when I envisioned, I was talking to that guy, he's probably been in the service. He's a redneck. He likes guns. He's drinking beer, and I just was talking to him, you know, hey, just because you love guns and you typically don't go to places where there's no gun zones, you can't be with your wife all the time. And it doesn't matter if you don't let her go out at night, you know, at late night at ATM, you never know what's going to happen. This is a crazy world. So that's what I was talking. So, yeah, that email was basically me saying you have to have this if you want to, you know, protect your wife.
So Jason, when you're writing emails and you've identified that target customer, how much are you thinking about the psychological triggers that you need to pull or the human behaviors that you need to make happen? Like, as you think through the process, what does that look like? You know, what's going on in your brain as you're figuring out what needs to be said?
Big time. Like, you know, the woman in the Lowe's Home Improvement, it's basically fear, you know, something that could happen to your wife. One good example of this is a PPC, a paid traffic management company. They had been doing a paid Facebook ad for a webinar to get more clients, and they had conversion people, but they heard about me and the MechLab stuff. So like, hey, you know, we can't really get any improvement on this. Can you take a look at this? And based on my research, I felt that, you know, it's the whole carrot versus the stick. What type of person is the prospect? And based on my research and my interviews, the first thing that I noticed was that the Facebook ad and the webinar opt-in page and the follow-up emails to get them on the webinar and the webinar itself was all carrot-based. And based on my research, I said, I don't think that's really the psychological trigger that's going to get the biggest bang for the buck here. I think you're going to see a big improvement if you test more stick-based strategy. And so I told them to test the Facebook ad on how much money they could lose. And the one key question that I asked that got me some specific numbers is, okay, so your target prospect, and you're give me an estimate of what you think they're losing by not using your services, whether it's running their PPC ads themselves or using one of your competitors, what would you say? And he gave me that number and I used that. And we did the first test on the Facebook ad. And here's another one. They only wanted to test the headline. I said, no, that's another thing you learn from MechLabs is that you don't need to be testing these small little increments. It's called a radical redesign. You test everything. And so they wanted to test just the headline. I said, no, we're not testing the headline, because think about it. If you go fear-based in the headline and then the rest of it is carrot-based, it's not congruent. You got to test everything. And we can come back and you can come back and test little things later on. But, you know, if you get a 400% increase in click-through rate or sales, then who cares what did it? You can find that out later. So they finally agreed to test everything, the headline, the body copy, and the call to action in the ad, and boom, it was a 27% increase in click-through rate. And I said, okay, now we're going to take that and we're going to apply it on the opt-in page. I told them what to say on the opt-in page. And I said, then I'm the one that redid all the emails, again, fear-based. And then I went through the webinar again. And again, this is important. You know, if you just change all the emails and the landing pages and the webinar and everything, all the rest of the collateral is incongruent or inconsistent with that, you know, you're going to see a huge decrease in conversions. So they let me change everything. I changed the emails, the opt-in page, and the webinar itself, and the follow-up emails, all to fear-based, and it shot through the roof across the whole spectrum.
Wow. Interesting.
What are some other misconceptions that copywriters have about writing email, especially new copywriters, where maybe we get really hooked on writing a certain style that we learned or achieving a certain length? We feel like it has to be long because people are paying us to write it, so we can't write a short email right, because we're getting paid, which doesn't make sense. What else are we doing or have you seen new copywriters do in their emails that is incorrect?
I see a lot of copycats. So they buy a course and so-and-so writes emails a certain way and that's all the way they write. And they limit themselves. Like, so-and-so writes plain text emails and they make a lot of money. And I'm saying, like, well, how much money are they leaving on the table? So you can't limit yourself and you can't blindly follow people because, again, most people don't have any data, so you don't know how well they're working. Back to the whole data thing, a lot of people don't really know what in the email is working the best, what type of email works the best. Another big problem is this whole, well, how much money did you make this month? And did you make more? Okay, then great. But I'm just like, why would you, it's the whole 80-20 principle. Why would you just throw crap against the wall and not know what works the best and keep doing everything, even if it's possible that only 20% of what you're doing is bringing in the most amount of money? So again, just blindly copying people, not knowing what works the best, and just limiting yourself.
I want to ask about a type of email that I've started seeing coming into my email box more and more, and that is the sales page as email. I'm seeing this a lot in financial emails especially, but it's basically, instead of, you know, selling the click to the landing page, they're actually throwing the whole landing page in the email and selling the product. What do you think about that approach? And, you know, are there segments that that works better in your experience?
I've seen that before. And again, I don't know how well it works. So I wouldn't be able to comment on that. I think it's possible it could work depending on the right list. But yeah, that's all I can say. You know, again, it depends on the data, because putting an entire sales page in email, probably because the email is going to be so big, it could land in a lot of spam folders. But, you know, it depends. If it gets through enough targeted people, you know, it might increase in sales, but, you know, you never know if they're actually split testing that or if they're just like, let's try it.
When you're sitting down with a new client and you're packaging a project, what are you thinking through to determine how many emails should go in a sequence during a launch period?
A lot.
That's a really helpful number.
You know, you basically got to sit down and plan it all out, and you got to take into account. This is another thing I see people miss is the follow-up emails, because you're going to see a huge amount of increase in not only sales, but click-throughs in response to emails when you're doing follow-ups. So what I'm talking about is like you send it first out in the morning early, and then later in the afternoon, maybe you change the subject line and you leave the email as is, and you follow up to people that haven't clicked through. So I always put that in my quote. Now you got your early bird bonus emails, you got your follow-up once they sign up, and then you got your launch emails, and then your follow-up launch emails to people who don't click or open, and then you got your customer emails. That's another big thing that I think a lot of people miss, because I try to tell my clients is that, you know, hey, you know, once the sale is done, it's not over. You want to reduce refunds, you want people to consume the product, you want them to be happy, you want to continue building the relationship. So I always factor that in, that they need to have a customer stick sequence.
Jason, we like to ask people about money, and we know you're sort of at the top of the game, so you might be a bit of an outlier, but what does a typical project engagement look like to you from a financial standpoint? What are you charging to engage with the customer? And if you can break that down on a per email, that's awesome, but I'm guessing that, you know, it varies quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm kind of out of the per email game now. I don't do that anymore. It's more per project. Typically, it's a lot of times I'm doing $1,000 per hour. So typically, I'll do a 1 to 3 or 1 to 3 to 5 hour initial consultation. And then it's either like, okay, this is awesome, we have the bandwidth, we have the manpower that I can actually follow this, or holy crap, this is awesome, we need you to do it. So what can we do there? And from there, it's typically a flat fee plus a percentage. And that kind of depends. If they're like really in the game and they have a big list and, you know, they can make X amount of dollars just by putting a one-line email, sometimes it is a percentage over their average of their last 3 months. I recently did this for a client, and they were averaging $300,000 per launch. And I said, well, that's $300,000 using my stuff that you're still using from our last project. So there's that. What we did, came to an agreement, was 10% of everything over $200,000. So that's typically a nice big flat fee. And the flat fee is, you just always got to assume you're going to get screwed on the percentage. And I always insist on using the tracking, either Clicky or Google Analytics or both, and access to the data. If it's a long term, sometimes I've done like 10 to 15K per month plus. Here's another thing. I found the sweet spot for percentages when it's consistent and they have a big list and lots of promotions is 5%. I found that 10% or anything higher than that, the contracts end sooner than later, just because, you know, as Gary Halbert says, all clients suck, and it doesn't matter how much money you're making them. They write that check every month and it's like, oh man, what if I could just do this myself? How much money would be saving? You know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I found that my longest contracts have been at the 5%, and they've always been big clients with lots of promotions, so it's worked out well as long as I have that, you know, decent flat rate.
And when you're determining that flat rate, are you really just sitting down and estimating, based on your experience, how long this will take you for this project, given the $1,000, you know, per hour rate?
No, I usually send that $1,000 rate through the window. It depends on, you know, do they do daily emails? Are they sending an affiliate promo every single day? If they're not, are they doing 2 promos a month? You know, I just figure out how much work it's going to be and how much potential money I can make on that percentage.
What does your initial consultation look like? You mentioned it's a couple hours, but how are you positioning it and providing value in that? And then also extracting what you need to determine if it's even a good fit for you.
Yeah, I'm just asking for all the data. I want access to the email service provider. I want to see any data that they have. I want to see their opt-in pages. I want to see their entire funnel. And again, sometimes you have to educate them because a lot of people come to me and it's just all about, you know, fix our emails. And I'm like, well, it's not just about your emails. Like, what's the frame that they're coming in on? And it's not even just the opt-in pages, like the paid traffic management company. You got to look at the paid traffic ads a lot of time to see, you know, what's the psychological framework that they're coming into your funnel. You know, are you going too blind and generating crap leads? So I got to analyze all that. So I ask for the paid ads, opt-in page if possible, access to all the past emails, the entire funnel pages. Take that and we do the call, and I just ask information on what they've been doing and the strategies they've employed and what's their main goals. I've learned to get all the data before the call, but that's it. Because if you talk to them too much, they kind of like take advantage and they want to get a lot of stuff done before the call. And my time is valuable. So I kind of insist now that, you know, hey, just give me your data so I have it with me sitting here in front of me, and we'll look it over when we get on the call.
Gotcha. Okay. And this is more of a personal question for me. I have been charging per email and, you know, I've raised that rate a bit. Should I change to a per project rate when it comes to email after you've been doing it for a little bit, or does that make more sense?
And are you just writing the emails and that's it?
Sometimes I'm also writing the sales page.
Okay.
So usually we'll have the sales page rate and then I'll have the email rate.
I mean, that's just me. I don't like the per email anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tend to think, you know, what's the value of writing this email? It's more about how much potential money it could make.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically my answer.
So, Jason, if someone were to say that, you know, they want to be the next big Jason Henderson, they want to be the next email expert, starting from scratch, what would you recommend that they do? Other than maybe adding 11 inches to their height, as, you know, as I would need to do.
They should use bunny rabbits in their emails. Well, first of all, I would recommend not becoming a quote-unquote expert. As Dr. Flint McLaughlin at McLabs likes to say, there are really no email experts. There's only experienced email marketers and expert testers. Yeah, I would definitely recommend becoming a specialist. Even if you do write sales letters, I typically don't. I can work with existing sales letters and change them up for different promotions, but it's really not my specialty. But if you can specialize in email and become known for that, then I think you're going to be able to make a lot more money and command higher fees. But yeah, instead of becoming an expert, become an experienced email marketer, know the data, know what works best, and you know, stand out from the crowd.
I love the idea around standing out. And yes, you meant, you know, you have an advantage in height, but one of our previous guests, Tepsi, mentioned that she stands out through her fashion and she wears a bun. And so I think we all can figure out how to stand out. I'd like to know which conferences you typically attend or you've attended in the past where you found the best clients.
This is back in the day. So you remember that Armin Morin seminar?
No.
No.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, he doesn't do seminars anymore, but that's the ones I typically went to. The GKIC, Dan Kennedy events.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you do more corporate clients, then MechLabs, the Marketing Sherpa Email Summit every year in Vegas is huge for that. When I spoke, I got a lot of people coming up to me and I'm just like, man, not really interested. I focus more on entrepreneurs and small businesses, not really the corporate crowd. Not to say that there's not entrepreneurs and small businesses at the summit, but it's probably 80% more corporate. So yeah, GKIC, I would say Ryan Dice's event.
Okay.
And Russell Brunson's event, those two probably.
Nice. Both of those guys are incredibly smart marketers.
Yeah. I haven't been to Russell's, but I have been to Ryan Dice's. I went with a few Halbert proteges, and we basically maybe went into half of one session the whole time. We were networking the whole time. So yeah, it's really good for networking.
So you've mentioned this several times as we've been talking, the Halbert proteges, and you've been involved with a group of copywriters who all knew Gary personally. And so I'm curious about that group and your experience with them. And I understand Scott Haynes was one of those who recently passed away, and you've been doing some stuff with that. Tell us, you know, about your experience with those guys and what you're doing with Scott's stuff.
Sure. And in 2009 was probably my first big public product launch. I was working with a copywriter who studied under Clayton Makepeace and helped him write his copywriting course, Tony Flores. He was a simple writing system coach for John Carlton, and there was a simple writing system coach mastermind in San Francisco, and he was allowed to bring a guest, so he brought me. And when I got there, Bon Halbert and Kevin Halbert, Gary Halbert's sons, were there. The first thing that John Carlton brought up to discuss in the mastermind was email. So they basically let me talk for a half an hour. So Bond is a very a big data guy. I asked him, I said, what would your dad do, Gary Halbert, if he came to you at the end of the month and you had been running three ads in three different newspapers? And he said, okay, how well did you do? And you said, I'm not really sure, but I know we made more money than the last month. And like, what would he do? And he said, my dad would fire me. So he's really big on data and knowing what works the best and doing more of what works the best and less of what doesn't. So he really was attracted to my line of thinking and stuff. So we got to talking, and then he introduced me to Samuel Markowitz, which was Gary's last protege. Ghost wrote a lot of his sales letters his last year that he was here. And then Sammy introduced me to Amit Suneja, another Halbert protege, and they had a skincare business, and I wrote emails for them. I did Abandoned Basket series, and that worked really well. And then I worked for Caleb O'Dowd, who within 3 months of working with Gary, Gary said he was one of the 10 best copywriters in the world. And I did some anxiety for him, and I've recently worked on their health supplement launch. And then the last person to meet was Scott. He had just happened to be moving back to Vegas, where I lived with my wife. So we went out to dinner, and we both love UFC. So I kind of became the email marketing go-to guy for Halbert Proteges, Carlton, and all Halbert Proteges come to me when they have a question about email marketing, because they understand that, you know, it's about the right message to the right person at the right time. It's not just writing great words. Yeah, so Scott moved to Austin after me and my wife moved to Austin, and we were hanging out here. So basically the last 4 years, I've probably hung out in person with Scott more than anybody. Both of us are introverts, so we just like, you know, ourselves or one or two people. We don't like big crowds. Stick to ourselves. This past Christmas, he went to Tulsa to be with his family, and we had talked about what we were going to do when he got back and all that, and he had a massive stroke on Christmas morning at his brother's house. And about 2.5 weeks later, I went up to, within 24 hours, I drove to Tulsa, and I was at his bedside for about 3 weeks, and then he finally passed away. What I've been doing at the request of his family is just continuing his legacy and going through all stuff and gathering testimonials. One thing I found that no one knew was that he was basically hoarding tons of home runs. Like he had a course that was already selling, not at the time, but before, called Shortcut Copywriting Secrets, and he had Hottest Sales Letters Volume 1. It's about 9 or 10 or so huge home runs that he'd written. But on his computer, I found tons and tons of home runs that not even Caleb and Sammy and Bon had seen, including four controls that are, three of them are still running today. One is a 14-year control, and I got in contact with his longest-running client, and he said that he still can't find any copywriter to beat Scott today. So I've just, wow. Yeah, so pretty impressive. So I've just been doing ad breakdowns on his best ads, contributing to the second version of his course. Guys like Clayton Makepeace, John Carlton, Paris Lampropoulos, David Deutsch, and a lot of big names. So it's been awesome to see the outpouring of support for Scott.
Where can we access those courses for Scott?
Yeah, I have a wait list right now. I'm still updating the course. It's at shortcutcopywritingsecrets.com.
And you've been sharing small pieces of what you've been working on your own Facebook group that you've done around Shortcut Copywriting Secrets as well.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to shift gears a bit and ask you about the future. And we've had a couple conversations in the club about the future of copywriting and whether or not robots will take all of our jobs. But I really want to hear from you, based on your experience, where you see opportunities for copywriters over the next few years.
I don't see AI taking over our jobs. I've seen all the stuff that's supposed to be like, oh, we'll write all your emails for you. You just put in a couple words and it's just crap.
Although let's be honest, a lot of email marketing already is crap.
Yeah,
it's not going to be a whole lot worse.
No, guys that don't rely on that are going to stand out even more. I have one example. I had a email marketing student, and he was a copywriter. There was another student that was struggling, and it was kind of out of the scope of the coaching. And so the other copywriter I'm talking about says, hey, Jason, would you mind if, you know, I have some copy cubs. Would you mind if we kind of worked on, helped him with his email a little bit more? That's outside of the scope of this coaching. I said, sure, feel free. And so he did. And the next call, this guy that got the help, he read his email. And I was like, dude, what the hell is this crap? This sounds nothing like you. This is like robotic. And what had happened was the copy clubs had used a quote-unquote template, and wasn't personal, wasn't conversational. It sounded nothing like my copy club that was struggling. And I see the same thing with all this AI stuff. So I'm not a big fan. I got asked to promote a recent launch for something like that, and I didn't want anything to do with it. So again, it's all about standing out and being able to write the right email to the right person at the right time. Knowing that data, I don't see it going to AI. I see people being able to do the research and say the right words to get the click or the sale of the email. I don't like the AI.
One last question before we wrap. You know, I watched one of the videos, testimonial videos of you, and your client was like in love with you, and someone said that you hadn't slept in 3 or 4 days, something like that.
3 days.
And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I need to stop complaining about just not sleeping for a couple hours. So how do you handle these big launches, like physically, and how do you manage just the grind so that you're not totally burnt out? If you do.
I'm not as hardcore as that, as much. I think the longest is 2 days now, not 3. No, but I like to work out in the morning first thing, no matter what. Even if I haven't had a lot of sleep, I like to at least do some cardio, do some stretching, and I find that works the best. I use what Tim Ferriss does, that the green juice, I forget the name of the company. But yeah, a lot of green juice, and I've been doing the intermittent fasting, and that's worked really well as well. So yeah, that's how I've been managing, is working out first thing in the morning, taking naps. Mm-hmm. So instead of just focusing on like, oh my gosh, I have so much crap I got to do, is, you know, taking that time, like even if it's just half an hour to 45 minutes, I just feel so much better. I'm so much clearer. And my wife is a good help too. I'll send her an email like, okay, this is the next email. And she'll send it right back. I said, where's my husband? This is crap. You need to take a nap.
Wow.
No, awesome. I'm being dead serious. She'll either say, is like, I'm telling you, you got to write a book. Or she's like, where the hell is my husband? This is crap.
That's great. Well, I appreciate it. Now I will feel better about my naps. I will feel much more confident as I take more naps. So we want to thank you, Jason. This is incredible. And I want to be like Big Jason when I grow up.
Yeah, me too. Where can we find you online, Jason? If people are looking for you, want to connect with you, where are the best places to locate you?
Facebook. Just search. I believe it's facebook.com/bigmarketing. And then emailresponsewarrior.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for just the information that you've shared, your expertise, the generosity.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Incredible. Lots to learn here. Thanks. Before we end the podcast, we just want to tell you about our sponsor, AirStory. AirStory is an application designed to help you write faster. And it does a few things really well. It makes collaborating with others on your team easier. So if you work with clients or other team members on projects, you'll love the way that you can interact within your project documents. But there are two things that we really like about AirStory that you won't get with Word or Google Docs. The first is the way that it lets you organize information into cards. If you refer to research or other information when writing blog posts or websites or sales pages, you'll love the way that you can organize bits of information or entire articles into a card file that you can then drag and drop into your document. And if you do your research online, AirStory's Chrome extension lets you cut and save information directly into AirStory. It's pretty cool. Plus, AirStory has a library of templates that you can use on different projects. So let's say that you've been hired to write a sales page or an email sequence and you don't have any experience or you want additional inspiration for the project. You can go into the template library, find a template for what you're working on, and use it to start your document. Maybe best of all, you can try it now for free. In fact, one project at AirStory is always free. If you're a professional writer, there's so much here that can help you. Check it out at airstory.co/club. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hugg and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.